Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 18th of August, all things political, which you always hear Mondays at 1 o'clock. And we have so much to talk about this hour. Governor Jay Nixon has called in the National Guard, saying it would help, quote, in restoring peace and order to Ferguson. And as you know, it was another rough weekend in Ferguson with no end in sight. One blogger wrote, what began as an impromptu vigil evolved into a sustained protest and is now beginning to look like a movement. The president is in a briefing right now with Eric Holder on the Ferguson situation. The Pew Research Center has released a poll showing 76% of African Americans have little or no confidence in Ferguson investigations, and 45% say they have none at all. We'll be talking about this issue with our guest. Also, Susan Page is our guest, by the way. Governor Rick Perry says he will fight a criminal indictment, two felony counts of abuse of power issued by a Austin grand jury. Susan has a very interesting story that was just posted this very moment. It'll appear in USA Today tomorrow. Her story is on Congressman Paul Ryan, and it's on the USA Today website. It's also on our Facebook page if you would like to read it. We'll talk about Ferguson first and then Ryan. So if you want to brief the story before we talk about that, that's on our Facebook page as well, the Kathleen Dunn Show. She spent a day with him talking about all kinds of issues and a lot of emphasis on his new book, which is to be published tomorrow, titled The Way Forward, Renewing the American Idea. What is our mission in Iraq? We'll ask Susan that. What have the new airstrikes accomplished? She wrote an interesting piece about women running for office in 2016 and whether or not they'll be facing a friendlier landscape. So those are just a few of the issues that are on my agenda. Whatever is on yours, feel free to call us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We are also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And all of those ways of reaching us are wide open right now. Susan Page is the Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. She writes about the White House and national politics. She had covered her ninth presidential election in 2012, and she is reported from five continents and many foreign countries. Susan Page, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Kathleen, it's great to be with you.
Well, the Ferguson story keeps dominating the news, and there doesn't seem to be an end in sight here. We're wondering who exactly is in charge and what can happen to bring peace back to that area, but I think peace is going to be a long time coming. What do you think?
Well, what a mess. You know, you knew that once an unarmed black man just in his teens was killed by a police officer that there would be a controversy. But at every turn, law enforcement officials, it seems to me, have mostly misstepped and made this into a real crisis that is still unfolding.
Yeah, it sure is. And that Pew Center report is amazing. 45% of African Americans have no faith in a Ferguson investigation. 76% have little or no confidence in the investigation. One hopes that we'll be able to get to the truth here and people will take responsibility.
Well, you know, often we see in polling, especially on polling on issues about race, the dramatically different points of view that blacks and whites have toward fundamental questions. And you've seen it in the interviewing from Ferguson. You saw the mayor of Ferguson, a white man, come out and say, there's no tension, there's no racial tension. And
right.
I'm unaware of this ever happening in the past. And then you see interview after interview
right.
of African-Americans who live there
yeah.
who talk about this just being the latest and perhaps most serious of the problems that they've had there.
Yeah. And then you have this whole other issue, which we've seen so many pictures of, this a police force that has these armored trucks, and it's been called the militarization of police departments. There's an interesting backstory to that, and it begs the question, do we need this kind of policing in our communities?
You know, I guess we should file this under the Department of Unintended Consequences, because we had all this armaments from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. As they wind down, the military doesn't need them. They made them available to the police department, sometimes for free. But what a police department in Ferguson needs with some of these armored vehicles, it is hard to understand. I saw on a comedy show last night that Keene, New Hampshire, has gotten one of these big armored vehicles. I mean, I've been spent a lot of time in Keene, New Hampshire, because they have the presidential caucuses in New Hampshire, and it's just beyond it past understanding why they would think this was a smart thing for them to have.
Mm-hmm. The person who has emerged here is Captain Johnson. I don't know if he's still in charge of what's going on, but he spoke yesterday at the Greater Grace Church, not far from the site of evening demonstrations, and expressed his remorse, saying that he wore a uniform, that he should stand up and say he was sorry, and went on to say some words about his own son, which I found very moving. His own black son, who wears his pants saggy, wears his hat cocked to the side, and has tattoos on his arms, and said, "That's my baby."
Well, you know, Captain Johnson, I think, has made a real impression on everyone stepping into the situation and saying some of the things that should have been said from the beginning, like, we're going to find out what happened. We're going to release information when we have it. This shouldn't have happened. I'm sorry. I mean, these are really very fundamental things that
Yes.
the law enforcement officials did not say for day after day, and that just stoked the anger that that people there understandably had in response to the shooting.
Yeah. The governor has called in the National Guard. He says it'll help restore peace and order to Ferguson. Do you think it was necessary because of some rioting and Molotov cocktails and some of the criminal element that's been on the streets there the last couple nights?
Well, you know, Kathleen, we don't want to underplay the threat to order. We've seen pictures of looting. Of course, that's unacceptable. The police say that they've had bottles thrown at them and Molotov cocktails. That's very serious. That shouldn't happen. But I think you did have a situation where the military reaction that law enforcement actually took made the situation worse. It made things more inflamed, not less inflamed. And so that's a decision, I guess, that we'll have to trust officials to make on the scene, whether calling up the National Guard is going to make sense or not. I do know that Governor Nixon just a few minutes ago announced that they were going to lift the curfew they had on last night, the 12 p.m., the midnight to 5 a.m. curfew, because that had caused, on the theory, I think, that had caused more problems than it had solved.
Mm-hmm. And when you got some of there are going to be several autopsies, but the independent autopsy that came out, I believe, yesterday or on Saturday, were there any red flags? Did you learn anything very important from that autopsy?
Well, we learned that this young man was shot 6 times. We hadn't known that. The officials had declined to tell us how many times he had been shot, twice in the head. All in the front, so not apparently while he was running away. The former medical examiner who did this independent autopsy, who's Michael Baden, who's a very well-known forensic doctor, said that it looked like, to the degree he could know, that he wasn't shot at point blank. There was some distance between him and the gun at the time it was fired, although he said to know that for sure, he'd have to be able to examine the clothing that he was wearing, which he wasn't able to do. So it answers some questions and raises other questions, and I think that it's going to take some time and some independent inquiry before there's an explanation of exactly what happened that people can trust.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's also happened is that somebody described this as the beginning of a movement, and we saw demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations in Milwaukee over the weekend. There's another one scheduled for this coming Friday. They've happened all over the United States. Is this the beginning of a movement? And if so, what kind of movement is it?
You know, I don't know. And I guess we won't know till some time passes. I do think it is whether or not it begins a movement, it does serve as a reminder that we are not really in a post-racial America,
right,
as many people had hoped when we elected an African-American president, when we saw an African-American as attorney general, when African-Americans have served as secretary of state. You know, I think many Americans had hoped we were getting to a point where we would not see scenes like we've seen out of Ferguson over the last week.
Yeah, and evidently Eric Holder is meeting with President Obama now. We'll get news if there is any comment when that meeting is over. Should the president has spoken, as we well know, beautifully and poignantly about race issues before. He's talked about Ferguson, but not at length and not in the same kind of national address to the country. Should he be doing more, do you think, Susan? Will he?
You know, the President Obama is so interesting on this issue because I remember sitting in the Democratic National Convention in 2004 when he gave when he was just a nominee for the U.S. Senate, and he gave that wonderful speech that so launched his political aspirations. And it was all about a post-racial America, an America that's defined not by race and also defined not by our political polarization. That was the beginning of this remarkable political career. But I think we found during the 2008 campaign, I can tell you the Obama campaign was very loath to discuss race or to see the campaign through the lens of race. They really pushed back every time reporters tried to raise this as an issue. And during his first term, I think he was reluctant to talk very much about race because he was trying to get other things done. I think they thought this was not helpful politically to be seen as the black president. We've seen President Obama speak out a bit more, I think, in his second term. But I've really been struck by how Eric Holder, also the first African-American to hold his job, has talked increasingly about issues of race and also about justice through the lens of race, you know, disproportionate drug sentences, the imprisonment of so many people in America, especially black men. And we've seen Eric Holder take this interesting leadership role. You know, we thought he was going to leave. We thought he was sick and tired of being attorney general. This has given him, I think, a reason for being attorney general. And he is definitely someone I'd watch. Whether the president should make a speech on this, you know, I'm all for it. I think it's hard to have a discussion on race in this country, so anytime we can, we should.
Right.
But I can tell you that the White House does not always see that being to his larger advantage.
Mm-hmm. It would be, you wonder how it would change the dynamic. It's not the same situation, but I remember that speech that Bobby Kennedy gave in Indianapolis after Martin Luther King was killed. It was a beautiful speech, and everybody said, don't go there, this is not a good thing to do. He did, and it was one of the few cities that didn't riot after that horrendous event in American history. You have to wonder, I mean, it's a brave thing to do, but for the president to show up in Ferguson and talk movingly about issues of race, you got to think that it might change the dynamic there in some way. I don't know what way, but it might change it some way.
Yeah, it might. It'd be something I'd love to cover.
So let's I'll bet you would. Yeah, I'll bet you would. We have so many other issues to talk about. Susan has a story that has just been posted on USA Today website and on our Facebook page on Paul Ryan, Congressman Paul Ryan. She spent a day with him, and we want to talk about that. But I know we're going to get a lot of calls about Ferguson, so I thought we would start taking some calls on that issue before we move into many other issues. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Susan Page, the Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, is our guest for All Things Political. And we'll start our calls with Angela in Neenah. Hi, Angela.
Hi. I just want to give a little perspective as a mom of a police officer. My son graduated a year ago from the Fox Valley Tech here in Appleton, and he went through the entire criminal justice program and then the police academy before being hired. And he interviewed at several places, and one was even out as far as New Mexico, where they're looking desperately for candidates from, like, Fox Valley Tech because our young men and women are being trained properly in not just, you know, your constitutional rights, but then how to conduct yourself safely for your own person and for the safety of the person that you're, the community. But he said down there, they're not even requiring much more than a high school diploma or a GED. So if you think of these people that don't have much in the way of education about what it means to be a public police officer, and then they're being funneled all of these arms and weapons and, you know, the large SWAT tanks and stuff like that, that they think they don't know how to use them appropriately. It's just muscle, muscle, muscle.
And Angela, what does your son say about the Ferguson situation?
Well, I always question when things like this happen, mm-hmm. and I always say, what would you have done? He goes, well, he would never get himself in that situation. But he shakes his head. He's like, he doesn't know how this happens. And he doesn't like it because then, of course, when he's out there on patrol, they're constantly looking on him as a bad guy instead of the reason that he went into being a police officer because he wanted to protect and serve.
Right, exactly.
And all of his friends are that way, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he says there's an app now, he showed it to me, that it's almost like the police scanner. So every time he goes to a call, these people are writing up with their cell phones and they're, you know, busy recording everything that happens in the police stop because there was an incident recently in Green Bay, and it makes it difficult for him to do his job and to protect not only the safety of the person who's involved in, like, an accident or something like that, but himself, too, because these people are, like, right on his back mm-hmm. and thinking, like, they have the right to say, you know, you don't know what's going on here, and you're violating his rights. And he's like, I'm doing my job. I'm protecting this person from this other person. You don't know the situation.
Mm-hmm. Susan.
You know, Angela, first of all, thank you to you and your son. Thank you for your son's service, because being a police officer is a tough thing, and you're putting yourself in harm's way, and we should never forget that. But what his message is important, right? It takes some training to know how to defuse a situation rather than inflame it. And one of the things that's been of concern to some of the experts when they look at the pictures coming out of Ferguson is that you see these guys in heavy gear, riot gear, with rifles pointed at peaceful protesters. And you know, if you're around police officers, Secret Service agents, other law enforcement officials who really know their stuff, they don't point a gun at somebody unless they are planning to shoot it. That is incredibly dangerous and alarming, and you can tell just from the picture how threatening it is, and how it increases the possibility of some kind of tragic accident. So, you know, I certainly applaud your son for pursuing this career and wanting to pursue it in the right way. You know, his comments also raise the question, that we've been reading about just these last few days, about whether police officers should be equipped with cameras that record everything they see. And I was reading in the Wall Street Journal this morning a story about a town in California that had done this and found that it greatly reduced the number of complaints against officers about use of force. Now, maybe this is because officers are less likely to use force, or maybe it's because people are less likely to claim officers used force inappropriately if there's a video of it. But whatever the reason, that is something that might be a promising avenue.
Mm-hmm. Angela, thank you so much for calling in. Anne in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. I'm just wondering why you think that it's so difficult for a police department in any city to just make a simple statement that goes along the lines of, if this young man who was not armed raised his arms and said, don't shoot, and the officer still shot him, that was wrong. If that's what happened, that's wrong. So we're going to find out what happened. But, you know, to just say, yes, that's wrong. Why can't they just say that?
Well, Anne, I think those kind of simple declarative statements can have a lot of power. I assume that they've been reluctant to say that. For one thing, they've seemed to not have a very good plan going forward, just generally. But they continue to insist that we don't have the full story about what happened in this confrontation. There may be things we don't know. But I agree. This is like a lesson you learn from your mom, right? If you do something wrong, say you're sorry, you won't do it again. Just stand up. It's only going to get worse the longer you deny it. I'm not saying that is exactly applicable here, but I think those are good rules to follow, whether you're in politics or law enforcement or journalism or anything else.
Thank you very much for your call. We'll still take calls on this particular issue, but there's a lot to talk about on all things political. So we'll move to Susan's Day with Congressman Paul Ryan, which took place recently in Janesville. Some interesting things to say, and this is on the eve of the publication of his latest book, which will be released tomorrow, The Way Forward, Renewing the American Idea. We'll talk about his relationship with the president, what he thinks about the Republican Party, the chances of their taking the Senate, and what he thinks about Hillary Clinton, if she'd be a good and formidable presidential candidate. We'll talk about more his 73-page anti-poverty plan and all that she talked about with him coming up. We have yet to discuss Iraq, where there have been a lot of airstrikes, and it begs the question, what is our mission now in Iraq? The indictment of Governor Perry and more. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Her piece on Paul Ryan is on the USA Today website, just released a few minutes ago, and on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Susan Page is with us now, having recently spent a day with Congressman Paul Ryan. A lengthy and very interesting story about him just posted on the USA Today website. You were in Janesville for this, weren't you, Susan?
I was, Kathleen, and we should note that USA Today posted this story early because of your show.
Oh, thank you.
We wanted to do the show,
thank
and
you.
We wanted your readers to have a chance to see it because no one could care more about Paul Ryan, I assume, than the residents of Wisconsin, and especially the residents of Janesville. I hope some of them are listening.
I'm sure that they are listening. It was a wide-ranging conversation, no doubt about that, in anticipation of his book as well. Did you get a sense that this is a guy who's going to be head of the House Ways and Means, and he's happy with that? Or do you get a sense that because of the book and his talk about the future of the Republican Party and Hillary Clinton, et cetera, that there's something in his head for a few years from now?
So, Kathleen, I've interviewed a million politicians who've written books like this because they're running for president.
Right.
About a million. I've interviewed a dozen politicians who've written a book like this because they want to run for president. I don't think that's what Paul Ryan is about. I think Paul Ryan is, believe it or not, delighted about the prospect about being chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. You know, we've forgotten, I think, how powerful and important legislators can be because we've sort of gotten out of the habit of passing legislation in Congress the past 4 years of just constant gridlock. But that's a role I think Paul Ryan sees for himself. And maybe he'll end up running for president in 2016. He says he won't make a decision about that until next year. But that's not the impression I got. I got the impression this is a guy who wants to go back into the House, head this important committee, get some things done on big issues like Social Security and Medicare and poverty programs and an overhaul of the tax code. And I thought that was actually pretty refreshing.
Well, let's talk about poverty programs, because it's interesting that there aren't too many people of either party talking about poverty programs these days. Why has he selected that? The ideas are controversial ones when he discusses them. But why is that something that he's running with?
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
He's doing that. And, you know, the only other politician in Washington who's doing that is Rand Paul. So two Republicans talking about trying to take innovative approaches toward poverty. I think it's because he is the heir to Jack Kemp. I hope you and your listeners remember Jack Kemp,
sure,
the Buffalo Bills quarterback who went to Congress. He became HUD secretary. But what he really did was push the Republican Party to care more about issues of race and urban affairs and problems of cities and housing and education. And Paul Ryan, here's a funny story Paul Ryan tells. Paul Ryan was working at a Mexican restaurant on Capitol Hill. And Jack, he said it was a cheap restaurant, and so people didn't leave big tips. And that they had something called, I think, sunrise sauce, which he said was basically like salsa in a cup. And if you could sell that to somebody, then you could put like $2 more on their tab, and that would make your tip bigger. So he was constantly trying to sell this sauce. And that he so respected Jack Kemp, this was before he worked for him, that when Jack Kemp would come in and eat, he would never try to sell him that sauce. He very much, Jack Kemp was somebody I covered. Jack Kemp ran for president himself in 1988, I guess. I think that's the right year. I did many interviews with Jack Kemp over the years. And Paul Ryan very much reminds me of kind of the sincere policy focus that Jack Kemp had. And I actually think Paul Ryan is in a position to be much more influential in delivering on his promises, delivering on the things he cares about, than Jack Kemp was, because, number one, Republicans are now in the majority in the House. Jack Kemp never had that. And for another, Paul Ryan has managed to be respected by both sides of the Republican Party, both establishment Republicans and Tea Party conservatives.
Yes.
That's pretty rare, and that positions him to be influential if he chooses to be so.
Mm-hmm. And what does he say? We think that things are not getting done now. He believes, though, that a possible Republican-controlled Congress could reach some agreements with the president on some issues. What are the issues?
Could reach some. He said a medium-sized budget deal. I don't know exactly how you measure that. Not a big one, but a medium-sized one. He says that on some trade pacts, that's possible. That's something that Democrats have more problems with than Republicans, and so some of the trade deals that the White House has been interested in getting approved might fare better if Republicans gain control of the Senate. But he did say on the big things, like on immigration reform or on a tax overhaul, those are things that probably don't move forward until we have another presidential election in 2016.
He predicted that Hillary Clinton would be a formidable presidential candidate, but talked about how she tries to shed the label, the Barack Obama label, she won't be able to. It would not work in her advantage. Do you agree with that assessment?
I think that President Obama presents some problems for Hillary Clinton because she needs to, you know, he's very popular with core Democrats, and she needs his support, but she also has to differentiate herself. We see her doing that sometimes a little awkwardly. So I think that's one of her big challenges. Whether that makes her beatable, I don't know. She is, in many ways, as he says, pretty formidable. He makes a comparison. I'm not sure I agree with this, but he says it feels to him like 1980, where Americans were just felt like they'd gone off on the wrong track. They didn't think the president was up to handling the job. Now, in that case, the president himself was running for a second term, Jimmy Carter. But he said that at that point, people are willing to kind of vote for the other side, to take a leap of faith. And he says that may be the situation we have in 2016.
Mm-hmm. You did a interesting piece on whether or not women who are running for office in 2016 will be facing a friendlier landscape.
Yes, and this was from an interview with Hillary Clinton that I did at the time her book came out, Hard Choices, where she said that she thought things were different. Things were that both the landscape was friendlier and also that it was easier to speak up and push back when there are sexist articles written or sexist remarks made. That, you know, that's been a tough thing for women candidates to handle in the past. But I think increasingly they're finding, rather than ignore a sexist slur, you're better off addressing it directly. And there's been actually a fair amount of academic research into this in the last couple of years. And she thought it would be easier than it was for her when she ran in 2008. I guess we're going to find out probably.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a couple phone calls, comments about Paul Ryan. Mike in Franklin. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Yeah, I'd like to say something about Paul Ryan. I am one of his constituents. In fact, I go to most of his town hall meetings. He's very arrogant and very dismissive, but what bothers me are his policies. He doesn't want to reform Medicare. He basically wants to tear it apart, and it's going to be impossible for my children and grandchildren to afford it in the future. He wants to give massive tax cuts to the wealthiest people in this country, okay, without paying for them. These are the things that I disagree with on Paul Ryan, because he's not looking for all Americans. He's only looking out for the very few privileged and wealthy ones.
Thanks.
That's why I disagree with Ms. Page, because she sounded to me like she was a cheerleader for Paul Ryan, and I personally don't see it after having watched all his votes for the last 10 years. And going to all his town hall meetings.
Yeah, well, to defend her, she's not a cheerleader for anybody, really. The piece that she wrote is pretty even-handed and interesting. It gives you an insight as to his background, his father and his family and his hardship as well. This is the kind of criticism that we hear, though, in Wisconsin about Congressman Ryan, Susan, as you can well imagine.
Well, first of all, Mike, thanks for your call, and congratulations on going to all those town hall meetings.
That's good, isn't it?
That's a great thing. You know, I don't mean to be a cheerleader for Paul Ryan. I think the things I praise about him is that he really cares about policy. And in a town where a lot of people only posture, that's refreshing. That said, you can certainly disagree with the policies that he's passionate about. He advocates very conservative policies when it comes to taxes, for instance, or as you say, on trying to overhaul Medicare and Medicaid. Some of those things are anathema to liberals and Democrats and to people who are dependent on them. Paul Ryan has been criticized for wanting to overhaul the Social Security system, which meant so much to him when his dad died. He was 16. His mom had to go back to work. His grandmother was suffering from dementia and came to live with them. They really benefited from the current Social Security system, and so there's criticism of him for wanting to change something that was helpful to him. One other thing I just might mention about the interview and about the new book, he also discloses for the first time that his father was an alcoholic and had gone on the wagon for a period of 20 years, but had fallen off the wagon, had gone into residential rehab in Wisconsin, had come out, was unable to stay sober. He says that whiskey washed away parts of the man I loved well before he died of a heart attack. So those that I guess is one of the personal things that comes out in this book hadn't previously been disclosed, including during the time when he was running for vice president. But Mike, I totally agree with you. You can certainly disagree with Paul Ryan's policies on all these issues, and you should. And if you do, you should, and you should keep going to those town halls.
He is, you write in your piece that's posted just now, he is withering toward the president. How so, Susan?
Well, he says basically that the president isn't interested in reaching compromises, isn't interested in moving to the middle on issues, is a doctrinaire, ideological liberal. He's pretty harsh toward the president. Now, I ask him, you know, the White House would say the reason there aren't compromise deals isn't because of the White House, it's because of conservative House Republicans, especially people who are supportive of the Tea Party movement, and I think a lot of people in Washington would say that's an important part of the dynamic of what's happened in going toward gridlock. But he gives the Tea Party a pass. He says that's not how he sees it, and he places it all on the White House side. I'm sure that Mike and others would disagree with that.
Mm-hmm. Susan Page is our guest this hour, and you're listening to All Things Political, where we've spent a good chunk of the hour talking about Congressman Paul Ryan. Susan's piece on him appears in tomorrow's paper, but it has been posted because she was going to be with us, actually. It was very nice of them to post the article about Congressman Ryan today. It's on the USA Today website. It's also on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we've been paying attention to what's going on in Ferguson. We have yet to get to Iraq, but feel free to move us into other areas as well. Let's go to Iraq for a few moments here and the airstrikes. It's hard to figure out what the U.S. mission is now in Iraq, other than we've done a lot of airstrikes, which some are saying have been successful. What is our mission, Susan?
Well, Kathleen, let me just tell you that we've done a poll over the weekend with the Pew Research Center, USA Today Pew Research Center poll, that's going to be posted at 3 o'clock this afternoon, but I spent the morning writing about that. And I'll tell you what Americans say, and there are two things. This was a little surprising to us. We ask Americans if the United States had a responsibility to address rising violence in Iraq. Now, this is a question we asked 6 weeks ago, and Americans said no by a significant majority. At that point, 6 weeks ago, Americans said, no, we don't have any responsibility. When we ask it now, a plurality of Americans say yes. Yes, the United States does have responsibility. We've seen a big shift in attitudes by Democrats and by women when it comes to do we have some responsibility there. I think that may be because of the stories about those people who were those refugees
right.
who were trapped on the mountain. We provided humanitarian assistance and airstrikes that helped them get off the mountain. So Even after all these years and years of conflict with the war in Iraq and such a big controversy, the idea that in 6 weeks people's points of view could still shift, that was a little bit of a surprise to us. We also asked, we found a majority support for the airstrikes, but we found a lot of concern about any larger commitment. When we asked people, what concerns you more, that the United States will go too far in getting involved in Iraq again, or that the United States will not do enough to address the rising threat from these Islamic extremists in Iraq. And we found a majority say they're more worried that we'll do too much rather than we'll do too little. Only about a third of Americans said they're worried we'd do too little. So there continues to be a lot of leeriness, skepticism about doing too much in Iraq and getting engaged there again in a big way.
Yeah. Well, and the country is so broken. Now we have a new prime minister who has a huge task ahead of him. How are you going to be able to get a government that takes on this issue, which eventually they have to do? We can't keep doing all of this, can we?
Well, and of course, that's been the issue for years with the Maliki government, to the great frustration of this administration. Now there's a new government taking over there, and I think that if this new government is able to be more inclusive than the old one was, there'll be an instinct on the part of the American government to do more with aid, to stay more engaged, to try to help them get established. But you're right. I mean, if there's one thing we've learned from that region this time and before, it's that there's only so much the United States can do. It's really up to the people there.
Rick Perry, Governor Rick Perry, this has been a busy few days here, says he's going to fight this criminal indictment, two felony counts of abuse of power issued by an Austin grand jury. What's the background on all of this, Susan?
Well, on the one hand, this is a prosecutor who investigates public corruption, including an investigation, an ongoing investigation that involves Rick Perry. So you look at that and you say, wow, he was really trying to get rid of someone who was investigating him. On the other hand, this is a prosecutor who was arrested for drunk driving, had an open bottle in her car. The mugshot, which has been all over cable TV, is pretty alarming looking. She spent 3 weeks in jail. And his side says she should not be allowed to be a prosecutor, and that he told her she should step down. She was an elected official, so it was up to her, and she refused to do so. So this is one of those stories where I think both sides see it very much through their political lens. I think a lot of Republicans and some others think this is a political stunt by the prosecutor. I think there are some Democrats who say, look, he's just after her because she's been investigating him and his cronies.
Right. What does it do to the presidential possibilities?
I don't think it's helpful. I mean, even if at the end of the day the indictment goes away and it turns out to be more of a stunt than a real problem, I think it's never helpful to be indicted for abuse of power, especially for someone who's been trying to make kind of a comeback after a really tough presidential campaign in 2012.
Susan Page, our guest. All Things Political is what you're listening to. Phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter @KDunnShow. We were talking about Ferguson. I don't know what happens with all of that. I don't know who's in charge. It speaks to this still large issue in this country of race and police and race and police and militarization. What happened to community policing? What about the relationship? And is it the beginning of a movement? And if so, how are we defining that movement? Should the president go to Ferguson? Congressman Paul Ryan, I hope you'll have a chance to read Susan's article. She spent a day with a congressman just before his book, which will be released tomorrow, talking about the issues in that book, talking about his life and his thoughts about the president and poverty and a number of issues. Iraq, what should our mission be in Iraq? How would you answer the poll that Susan just described? Rick Perry, are his presidential ambitions gone because of this indictment? Some of you may be following that closely, and what do you think about the fact that it may be politically motivated? Reach us, call us. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll go back to phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Susan Page is our guest right now, and let's go to phone calls, more of them. Steve in Madison is next. Hi, Steve.
Yeah. First of all, we appreciate your many years of service, and we hope that Wisconsin Public Television records your interview there so that it can be broadcast to a much wider audience than we would receive it if we had to go to Milwaukee to see it.
Thank you, Steve, but then I'll be nervous.
Well, that'll be okay.
Okay.
Anyway, regarding Iraq, and I'm wondering, apart from the humanitarian considerations that are being expressed now, do we have any way of knowing whether any U.S.-based oil companies have investments that are threatened by ISIS taking over that area? Are there any pipelines or any oil company contracts from American-based companies which we are, in fact, defending if we are fighting against ISIS there?
Steve, first of all, I want to second your suggestion that Milwaukee Public Television record Kathleen's talk, because I would like to know what she learned from doing 10,000 interviews, quite a few interviews. And on your second thing, I think that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that question.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Mike in South Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Couple comments. Paul Ryan, I own property in Racine, and as far as I can tell, he has done nothing to the poverty in Racine. And I would refer to Paul Krugman's comment about Paul Ryan. Krugman calls Ryan the consummate flim-flam man, and I would agree with that. In terms of Iraq, when are we going to get over the fact that Iraq is an artificial construct after World War One? It's just like Czechoslovakia, which no longer exists, and it's just like Yugoslavia, which no longer exists. Trying to hold Iraq together is like trying to hold Yugoslavia together, and we know what happened there. In terms of the governor of Texas. We don't have to worry about him being indicted. He's no legitimate candidate no matter what. He'll just trip over his own feet if he runs. Those are my comments.
Thanks, Mike. You want to respond, Susan?
Mike, pretty far-reaching.
Yes.
Landscape there. Let me just on one of your comments about Iraq dividing into separate parts. You know, that may still happen. And, of course, as we know now from the first spate of books that have come out from the Obama administration, that's something that Joe Biden has been arguing inside the White House, that Iraq inevitably is going to divide into three parts and that's a reality we ought to just recognize and live with. That isn't the policy that the president has chosen to pursue, but it is a point of view that some analysts subscribe to. So we'll see. It's certainly been a tough road there since the U.S. invasion. No question about that.
When you look at the world landscape, Susan, over the last couple of months, one thing after another, isn't it?
It's really unbelievable. In fact, I'm wondering, are things more chaotic than ever before, or do we just feel that way because we're right in the middle of it? Do you have a theory on that?
I think they're a little more chaotic.
I do too, but some people say, well, you know, things we've had problems of turbulence before. The thing that strikes me is how these crises seem disconnected from each other. So we've got Ebola virus
yes.
in Africa. We've got the rise of ISIS in Iraq and Syria. We have the confrontation in Russia between Russia and Ukraine. We've got the flood of kids coming from difficult circumstances in Central America across our southern border. It's not some unifying principle like during the Cold War. It's like a series of very serious things happening in different parts of the world, and the U.S. has some role in all of them.
Right. Let's spend a few moments on Ebola, because it's such a horrendous event that's going on in Africa, and it seems as though once it spreads to the United States and we get a couple cases, we get this isolation unit and top-notch medicine, and it really points, as many things do these days, to the great disparities in this world. If you have something in a country that's advanced, you have good treatment. If you don't, it brings to mind the question of what it is we as a world community are to do about this.
Although, you know, that's certainly true. And the two Americans who got Ebola certainly have received a level of care that the thousands and thousands of Africans who have died did not. You know, there is the example of addressing HIV/AIDS in Africa, though, that is kind of to the other point.
Yes.
Which is the United States has had, and the world has had some success in controlling AIDS and treating people who have HIV/AIDS in Africa. A real initiative of George W. Bush,
right.
And one that President Obama has continued. And that's been kind of a success story, despite the problems in Africa with their medical infrastructure and despite the considerable costs of some of these treatments for AIDS. That has actually gone pretty well. And let's hope that 6 months from now or a year from now, we'll be able to say something similar about the spread of Ebola.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we're welcoming your phone call. Susan Page is our guest this hour, and we're covering all kinds of topics. We talked about Paul Ryan. Again, a reminder to you that go to our Facebook page and you can read her interview with him. She spent a day with him, and it's thorough and even-handed, and that's on our Facebook page. It's also just been posted within the hour on the page of USA Today. Ferguson, I'm very interested in your response to what's going on in Ferguson and what it is, what it says, why this is going on and on and on, and if you can think of any way for peace to be restored to that community. In any of the other issues we've brought up, feel free to comment on them in the minutes that remain, and there aren't too many of them, so call now, 800-486-8655. Dan in Madison is our next caller, Susan. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yes, I was wondering if when you did the interview, if you wrote about the, and one of the earlier callers talked about the, in his district, Ryan's record on income inequality, poverty rates, job creation is highest. I think it's one of the, when you look at the areas he represents, one of the highest in the state. And yet he always gets a pass on all this stuff. The thing is that the rising inequality in this country is one of the things that's causing a lot of problems. Right in Janesville, we have an auto plant there that has been vacant, and all the other states have been able to attract other companies to come and set up new production lines, but yet we still have not attracted any of these, and it's the I think the anti-labor of people that really represent, you know, they really don't represent the workers, the middle class. They represent somebody else. And very few in the media are really telling the truth. They're apologists for some of these people like Ryan, but they really don't really tell it the way it is, like it used to be. And so I'm really dismayed at the media and how it's reporting a lot of these things.
Thank you, Dan, for the call. Did he talk about income inequality or returning jobs to the area, Susan?
We did talk about income inequality. I asked him about that issue because it's one that's got so much currency on the other side. You hear Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton and many Democrats talking about income inequality, and the president calling it an issue of our time to address widening income inequality. And I think it will not surprise you to hear that Paul Ryan, as a conservative Republican, had a different point of view toward income inequality. He said, here's what he said, which you can agree with it or not. He said, the problem isn't income inequality or wealth inequality. The problem is opportunity, especially for those who need it most, people at the bottom, people who are poor or struggling to get into the middle class, that the government has a role in trying to make sure there's an opportunity for people to go to school and to get a job and to improve their lot in life. But he said that the inequality with the wealthiest people is not something that concerns him. As long as there's opportunity at the bottom, he says he is not concerned about how much more people are making at the top. So that is an issue that's going to really distinguish Republicans from Democrats, I think, next time around, regardless of who the presidential nominee is, because the two parties have very different points of view on what matters when you talk about opportunity and inequality.
Thanks, Dan, for the call. Linda in Larson, hi.
Hi. I was just calling to comment on what you were talking about a moment ago in regards to the world feeling very chaotic. It does to me as well from a lot of different venues. But one of the things that speaks to me is recognizing the fact that there is great disparity. And we hear of it more often now because of the Internet and our ability to communicate with each other rapidly. And I think that's part of what's coming to the surface in all of the world is the fact that we are very, in many cases, disparate. There is much disparity between all of us and income levels and what's available for certain people if you have money versus not. And in conjunction with that, looking at power over another and wanting to make that more of an even playing field instead of it being so hierarchical and have so much disparity. I guess that's, I'm going to turn around and go back to that. So.
Thank you for your call. Susan, we have about 20 seconds.
20 seconds, Linda.
Yeah, sorry.
A great comment. And I just say, I think that the power of social media and communication has changed everything from our perception of the world and our knowledge about the chaos around the world to what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri.
Oh, yes.
One of the reasons it's had so much power, we have seen it unfold in real time on places like Twitter.
We sure have. Susan, thank you very much for being with us. Always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks. Thank you, Kathleen. It's always nice to be on with you.
Susan Page, our guest this hour for All Things Political, and she is the Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. They held off, they posted the article on Congressman Ryan so that it could coincide with our show, which was nice, and it's on USA Today's website and also on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to K.P. as well for on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee. And thank you, as always, for participating in the program.